Unlock me! Unlock me!
I'm not going to swear, okay?
You know what I'm saying?
No.
It's Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Hi, everybody. Welcome in on a Monday. So perfect to have you with me today. Why? Just because it is. Can't I just say it's perfect that you guys are driving home or to right now? That it's perfect that we are all here together on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, talking Chicago sports. And I have a ton that I want to get to over the next 3 hours right here on The Score, and would love it if you would participate and you would like to become interactive with me, Mark Grody, here on The Score. 312-644-6767 is the number. That is the text number. I just refreshed the text line. Last text 4 minutes ago. Maybe Schriffen is exactly who Reinsdorf wants him to be. The chip on the shoulder. That's just a random read. I am not starting with John Schriffen, I promise you that. Sometimes I just like to read the text messages from the previous show. That's where they left off. It has been refreshed, and I would love to hear from you. 312-644-6767 to text or to call today. I'm also on Instagram. I just put a post up on my story to give you an idea of what we have going on. Mark_Grody. Maybe not necessary for you to check that out if you happen to be listening on the radio right now, because I'm going to tell you right now what we have tonight. Very much football oriented tonight. 6:25, we will talk to Sam Munson, the lead analyst for Pro Football Focus. Of course, we will talk about the Bears, but I want to get into sort of some of the rest of the NFL and some of the, including teams like the Detroit Lions. I want to see what Munson thinks about that team, who the Bears will play a couple of times this year. He thinks that the Indianapolis Colts had one of the best drafts this year, and the Bears will see the Colts early in the season, so we'll ask him about that and many other things, and of course much Bears with Munson as well. But we expand with him. We have the ability to do that. At 7 o'clock, Brian Baldinger will be on, Odyssey NFL expert. We'll talk more Bears with him and some of the draft picks of the Bears. 7:25, my good friend Herb Howard of It's the Bigs, a fellow beat reporter for the Bears, will both be out at OTAs a little bit later on this week. Haven't had Herb on for a while, so I get to have him on at 7:25 tonight. 8:25, Tony Andracki of the Marquee Sports Network, a fellow Redbird, to talk about the Chicago Cubs. I got some awesome anniversaries that we're going to talk about later on in the show. Some great audio, too. Let's get to it, though, with the Cubs and the White Sox. Since we're not going to have a ton of time to talk baseball tonight, I want to start there with both of the teams. The Cubs off today. They are hosting Atlanta tomorrow. The Cubs are in a situation where they are, we kind of know what's been going on with the Cubs this year. They've been underachieving to some extent, but also overachieving because of all the players that have been in and out on this team. It can go both ways. You could look at it either way. The Cubs have underachieved or they've overachieved. They have managed to be 26-22, two games out of first place in the National League Central. The Milwaukee Brewers have played better than the Chicago Cubs this year. Now, it is so important. This is one of those years where it is incredibly important that the Cubs win the National League Central, that they get the division this year. Why? Because we are seeing it. We are seeing it right now. This division is poised to eventually get much better. It reminds me of 2015 when I was doing pre and post for the Cubs, and in that season, and then in 2016, really even more in 2016, I would say, because the Pirates had started to give up in 2016. I mean, they were there up until the All-Star break, and then they started to break things up. That was a year, 2016, where it was important to win because the league was down, the division was down, yet you could start to see the planting of seeds of some of those teams in the division. We are seeing that right now. I do believe that the Cubs are the best team in the National League Central. Yes, Milwaukee has played better to this point, but I believe that they are the best team, and they're going to need to act like it, because you just saw what came through Chicago this weekend. The Pittsburgh Pirates taking 3 out of 4 from the Chicago Cubs. I don't think the Pirates are there yet, but they are starting to build something. I mean, with Paul Skenes, you've seen that act twice now. You've seen Jared Jones a couple of times, and you know he's not as good as Paul Skenes, but he's pretty good too, man. Another young fireballer. So they are on the way in terms of getting their core together. They are similar in that to the Cubs, in that their offense doesn't exactly put the fear of God in you at this point. But again, they took 3 out of 4 from the Cubs, and they're certainly building something. They're on the upswing, but not there yet. So the Cubs need to take the division now while there is still a chance. And not that the Cubs aren't building something as well, but I'm just saying the division is there for the taking a little bit more than maybe it has been in the past. I mean, right now, just pulling up the division so you can see what I'm talking about. The Milwaukee Brewers at 27-19 are sitting 2 games better than the Chicago Cubs at 26-22. And then just a precipitous drop off in the division. The Pirates 22-26, despite taking 3 out of 4 from the Cubs. They are already 6 games out in the division. The St. Louis Cardinals are 20-26. They are 7 back of the first place Milwaukee Brewers in the division. And then Cincinnati, we know, I mean, they have just had all sorts of issues on that team, but the Reds' future still scares me. I mean, hey, they made a run last year and then fell off big time, and they are 19-28 right now, 8.5 back in the division. But that's a team too that if they get their bleep together, they are going to be good in short order in the National League Central. So the division is there for you right now, Cubs, and then it gets you into the tournament, and it puts you in a place where you could potentially do damage. I do not believe the Cubs are ready to, maybe they can win a series, but this is not a World Series caliber team at this point, unless we see the team completely reshaped by the trade deadline, and that's another story. Here's the thing too. Tomorrow, the Cubs will be hosting Atlanta. Javier Saad against Charlie Morton. And I'm thinking about Javier Saad. And I am thinking about Shota Imanaga. How good both of these guys have been. Javier Saad, 4-0 with a 1.49 earned run average. Shota Imanaga, 5-0 with now a 0.84 ERA after just another masterpiece this weekend. Man, thank God. I mean, the Cubs very easily could have been swept. The rare and endangered 1-0 win for the Cubs and Imanaga on Saturday. So you got him doing what he's doing, and Javier Saad. It's no longer novelty, though, with these guys, with Saad and Imanaga. Like, you have to have this from these guys. And that's a tough position, because mostly when I've watched, especially Shota, but Javier Saad as well, it's been fun, and it's been interesting in that, oh, my God, another great game. But we didn't expect this to happen. We expected this to come from, you know, Justin Steele and Jameson Taillon and Kyle Hendricks. But it hasn't, and it's gotten to the point because of the lack of offense and some of the ineffective pitching from guys like Justin Steele and Kyle Hendricks that all of a sudden – you have to have that from those guys. Imanaga's got to be that good. Saad against the Braves tomorrow at Wrigley Field, he's got to be that good. And you don't want that to be. You want it to just have it where you're enjoying it for those guys, but not depending on it yet with those guys. And you know, that doesn't mean that those guys are not ultimately dependable, but come on, let's be real about this. We're all kind of walking this tightrope with both of those guys in terms of, can they keep this up? And you know, we know we're not gonna see, you know, 1-something ERA probably from Saad. We're certainly not gonna see a 0-point-something from Shota Imanaga. But it's still possible that those guys could be top 5, top 10 in Cy Young still. But I mean, I tend to doubt it. I doubt that that will be the case. So I still think you are going to have it from Justin Steele. The Kyle Hendricks situation, that is really tough. I've talked about that a lot over the last couple of shows that I have hosted. Just a bunch of bad starts this year for Kyle Hendricks, including his most recent. I thought the overriding theme, though, from Craig Counsell about it was, yeah, we know he's struggling, and yeah, it's a problem. And this is me just paraphrasing or really inferring what I think he's trying to say. Yeah, it's all, but we need him. We still have a lot of pitchers that are on the mend, trying to get back. Jordan Wicks comes to mind as one of those guys. We know Steele is still trying to figure it out, but is there a better alternative to, you know, letting Kyle Hendricks figure it out? I've said it last couple of days. My plan for Kyle Hendricks is, yes, he does get another start, and I don't know that he's been promised that yet, unless something came out today. I give him another start, but if he gets hit up again, then you got to figure something else out. And it doesn't necessarily mean you cut the guy. Maybe you try him in the bullpen. Maybe he's your long relief guy. Maybe you ask Kyle Hendricks what he'd be interested in doing, just because of the respect that you have to have for a guy like him. But that's a little problem as well. In terms of, is there minor league help coming for the Cubs? You know, maybe, but they're not fully cooked yet. That's the way I look at it. I mean, there's a couple of guys. Like Cade Horton, I know he had one really bad outing. I'm going to check out what Cade Horton's been up to. I haven't paid much attention, but I know that he's in AAA, so that would probably put him on the verge unless the Cubs think otherwise. Brendan Davis has been hot as well. My guy CJ Edwards might be a boost to the bullpen as well. But this year is dissimilar to 2015 in that you don't have all these guys that are ready and ripe and good to go. I mentioned Cade Horton. You know, Owen Casey has played well in the minors as well. You got a glimpse of him during spring training. Matt Shaw, way too raw. Kevin Alcantara, really excited about him, but I don't think that he's a guy that is necessarily ready. So, I mean, I like the names that have been thrown around so far. You know, Brendan Davis has been in the minors now for a while, injury riddled for some time, but he has been knocking the cover off the baseball as well. So that's one thing. Last thing on the Cubs before I jump over to the White Sox, with a couple things I want to talk about with them, is that I wrote down four other things that I think will normalize for the Cubs this year, which is really going to give them the boost in the division that I think they will eventually have. And one of those is Dansby Swanson. I don't believe that Dansby Swanson has all of a sudden lost it. I know things have been going poorly for him since, you know, about halfway through the second half of the season last year, after I thought he was your best player for most of the first half last year. Dansby Swanson just hasn't had, the biggest thing with him, why I know it's going to normalize, is because he has not had a good year defensively. You know, even when he has made plays, a lot of low throws. You know, it reminds me of Addison Russell when he kind of went through that yips period where everything was low over the first base to Rizzo. Now you're getting the same thing, or have had the same thing, with Dansby Swanson. He's just not hitting, but I have to believe that he will. Another one of the things is, and I just mentioned this in conjunction with Dansby Swanson, the defense is going to get better. They were so good defensively last year. You obviously don't have Swanson and Nico Horner playing right now, and you have Madrigal playing and then Mastroboni over at shortstop. So that part is going to get better, I believe, just based on track record. You know, Michael Busch got to keep on working on the scoop over at first base. If you're a major league first baseman, you are expected to make a lot of those plays. Ian Happ has been troublesome, but I put him in the category of Kyle Hendricks in the past anyway, and that Happ goes through these periods but eventually figures it out. I do think Happ will snap out of it, and I'm really sure about Justin Steele. I think that he will figure it out. I mean, I've seen some location issues with him, but the velocity is there. I mean, he was hitting 94 miles per hour in that first game of the Pirates series where he didn't look good and he was getting hit hard. He's been hit hard a couple of times, but that's definitely a guy who I do believe will figure some things out. 312-644-6767 if you want to get in on the action. I want to switch over to the White Sox here for a couple of things. The White Sox lose to the Blue Jays today by a final score of 9-3. Sox go down. But man, there were quite a moment in this game if you were watching, and I imagine a lot of you did not watch the White Sox game today. I get it, because it's a working day and the White Sox are 14-34. But in the White Sox second inning, no score, Paul DeJong, who had a great day today, 3-for-4 with a home run, although he did pop out with two on in the eighth inning with the game still kind of on the line. Yeah, they were down by four. He should have hit a three-run homer. Paul DeJong with a two-out single. He steals second base. Corey Lee, the catcher, with an RBI hit, 1-0 White Sox. Nicky Lopez, a single. Corey Lee scoots on over to third base. So here's the scenario.
And you got to wonder if the White Sox will try to be aggressive here with first and third, two outs. Do they send Nicky Lopez from first?
They might, but if they want to do that, then Corey Lee has got to be ready to score. He's not a runner. I think that you just probably keep him as is. Now, another factor in this, too, okay, you got a big four hole open. They're playing Danny to pull the ball, but Barrios is real slow to the plate. Really big leg kick. So if Nicky gets a good jump, by all means, but I don't think they're going to send him to try to score the runner. I think that it's going to be more just send him to try to get a stolen base and two guys in scoring position.
Check on Lopez. One ball, one strike to count on Mendick.
There goes Lopez from first. The throw down to second. And coming home! And they got Lee at the plate.
And that's what we just talked about, right? Corey Lee just doesn't have the speed, and he gets cut down right there at home plate. And the Blue Jays are out of the inning with only one run.
Josh Riffin and Gordon Beckham on NBC Sports Chicago. How about Gordon Beckham just absolutely nailing that thing with the Sox first and third, two outs, and they try the sneak steal from third base. Corey Lee, the catcher, gets thrown out at the plate. Now, on the surface, I would say this is an easy pickings for Pedro Grifol. But in this case, I liked how aggressive he was in the second inning. I didn't mind the play, even though the logics that Gordon Beckham gave was spot on. And that's just because of, again, 14-34. You are playing a team, you know, I know the Blue Jays have not had the greatest start, but they got a bunch of bombers in that lineup. And you got to try stuff, man. You have to manufacture. You have to do whatever you have to do. If you are trying to win games and you're Pedro Grifol, like, you got to take some risks sometimes, even if they seem unnecessary or incorrect. It's kind of like a bad football team going for it on fourth and what the hell? It doesn't matter at this point. So I did not have a problem with it, and the way it was going early in that game with the Sox, I was like, okay, I kind of like what's going on here with the White Sox in this game. But in the end, the whole thing did not work out for the White Sox. They lose to the Blue Jays 9-3, the final score. By the way, just as to put a point on this thing, Pedro Grifol, like, if you were critical of him for that double steal, that in the seventh inning, like, Corey Lee, the same dude, was on base in the seventh inning, and what did he do? He stole second base with two outs. So, same guy. I don't know. Pedro Grifol might just think that Corey Lee is speedy, and he does have a quick first few steps as he did to second base. So there is an aggressiveness going on right now with Pedro Grifol, and I couldn't help but liken some of it. Eric Fetty today, six innings, did allow five runs on seven hits, gave up a homer, 84 pitches. He is now, because He's a guy that you could trade. He's 4-1 with a 3.10 ERA after today. So he is definitely still somebody who is tradable. Tommy Pham probably be, you know, desirable. It doesn't feel like you're going to get a ton for any of these guys, but you have to start thinking that way if you are a White Sox fan in terms of what you want to do with these guys. And then, you know, Paul DeJong, who hasn't been great. He had a great day today, but that's just a veteran utility dude who would probably look good on some playoff roster. So, yeah, that's the way that we're watching the White Sox this year, who are now, and you're going to hear a lot of this with the White Sox, they're putting together a nice little losing streak again. They've lost 4 in a row. They have now lost 7 straight in Toronto. They're getting swept by the New York Yankees. So, I mean, you knew this was going to be a tough trip for the White Sox, who tomorrow night will have Garrett Crochet on the mound in Toronto. 4-4 with a 4.18. Don't like the way that ERA keeps inching up for Crochet, who, you know, I'd like to think that Crochet is part of the future for the White Sox, but you can't deny any type of trade talk when it comes to these guys, with the proof being Dylan Cease at the beginning of this season. Hopefully we'll have some time to return to some baseball talk later on in the show, but coming up next, we are going to hear from Sam Monson, the lead analyst for Pro Football Focus, to talk about a lot of the NFL. We'll expand beyond the Bears. We will talk Bears with him, but there's a lot of good NFL talk coming up with Sam Monson. I'm Mark Grody, here with you until 9 o'clock on The Score.
Let's get back to more Mark Grody on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
First time in 100 and something years, we have a quarterback.
We got our guy.
Yeah.
This is it.
Caleb Williams, generational talent.
Caleb's the guy.
Best quarterback prospect since, you know, the last one. And he's the guy. He's been, you go and read any Caleb Williams scouting report, you're going to hear the names Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, right? What we're dealing with here.
Welcome back in here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm Mark Grody, and really excited to have on with us Sam Monson. He is the lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Focus. Sam, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a blast to have you on, as always. And I just before we came on, I was sifting through a few of your stories. I hear you a lot, but I was digging into some of them. And I saw your 10 favorite team draft class. And I see the Colts and the Eagles and the Steelers in your top three. And it's crazy around here because everybody around here thinks that the Bears have the greatest draft class of all time because of Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. But you do not have them in your top 10. Can you explain to us why around here, where we think that this is the greatest draft class ever, that you don't have the Bears in your top 10?
Yeah, I mean, I think because you knew that the Caleb Williams thing was happening from so far out, it sort of feels a little bit like just giving somebody credit for the layup. You know, we knew that Caleb Williams was the number one player in this draft. We knew that he's the number one quarterback in this draft. And we knew that Chicago was taking him at that spot basically the moment they traded away Justin Fields, you know. I don't really kind of count that as part of their draft grade, their draft credit, or evaluating what they did in the draft. Odunze, you know, in the top 10 as well, coming back and getting him, I think, was a great pick. And they absolutely, you know, when you're looking at whether they've gotten better or worse, all those kinds of things, they have catapulted themselves forward, and it should have an incredible impact. But in terms of sort of draft grades and, you know, my favorite draft classes, I have a hard time reconciling the Caleb Williams pick as being of the same kind of category as these other teams that, you know, I identified a guy as the draft was unfolding and, you know, came away with what was a sort of movable target.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a no-brainer. It would have been crazy if the Bears hadn't done what they did with Caleb Williams. And quite frankly, when Rome Odunze is available to you at 9, you absolutely have to take that guy. That said, and I want to expand to a lot of the rest of the NFL too with you, but I haven't heard your thoughts on Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. Let's talk about both of those guys and where you had them ranked wide receiver wise and quarterback wise. I mean, we'll start with Caleb. Do you think he was the best quarterback in this college class?
Yeah. And I don't think it was particularly close to the next guy. The more I kind of dove into the quarterback class, the more I thought it was Caleb Williams and then a gap, you know, and then we can talk about 2, 3, 4, 5 or whatever order, but you know, it started off and a lot of people thought maybe Drake May was quarterback one or right there with Caleb Williams. To me, the further you dove into it, the more it was Caleb Williams is by far and away the best quarterback of this group. He's got production. He's got the PFF grading, you know, in above 90 in two different programs, albeit with the same head coach. And he's the guy with special within his range of outcomes. You know, you look at all the plays that he's making. It's not a coincidence that the names you hear mentioned every time you look at scouting reports on him are Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. Like, he genuinely has that stylistic ability to create something crazy out of nothing on any given snap. And that's not something you can say about a lot of these other quarterbacks. So, yeah, I think Caleb Williams was by far the number one guy. Receiver, Roma Dunze, I think I had him as wide receiver three, but I think those big three in any given year, in any normal year, any of those three would have been wide receiver one. You know, they are all elite talents. They're all extremely high-end receivers, and they just happened to come into the draft at the same time. And so Dunze, to me, was a hair below the other two guys, but in a different draft class could easily have been the top receiver taken.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. It's very close, but he probably is by a hair, for me, just a little bit behind Malik Nabers in terms of what that guy can do and his explosiveness. One more thing on Caleb Williams before we move on. Where does he rank with you historically, like relative to past draft classes? He's the best quarterback prospect since?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because we're having that conversation seemingly every year. You know, Trevor Lawrence, and unfortunately, the last guy we had it seriously about was Trevor Lawrence, who was being talked about as, you know, the best prospect since at least Andrew Luck, maybe Peyton Manning, maybe all the way back to John Elway, you know, genuinely sort of a generational prospect, one of the best that's ever come into the draft. Now, Lawrence has been good, but he hasn't been great. He certainly hasn't justified that kind of billing. So immediately you're a bit nervy about doing it again for a guy a couple of years later in Caleb Williams. But he is a genuinely phenomenal prospect. I mean, he's got all of the special traits. He's got incredible production. He's done it, you know, multiple different receivers, multiple different supporting casts around him. And there's no sort of massive weakness to his game. So, you know, I think you have to see him as one of the best prospects in the last sort of several years to come along.
Talking to Sam Monson, the lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Focus, on Mark Grody on The Score. So the Bears will see the Colts early in this season. You have him as your number, or the Colts having done very well in the draft this year. Tell us why you think Indianapolis did so well.
I think their first couple of picks were absolute home runs. You know, we thought Laiatu Latu was probably the best defensive player in the draft. And when you look at his production, at his grading profile, he's closer to guys like Nick Bosa and Miles Garrett and Chase Young than he is the next tier of edge rusher. And, you know, PFF grading, we started grading college back in 2014, rather. And there's been a sort of learning curve over the last 10 years of what grades at which positions kind of translate well to the NFL, what data points are sticky from the college landscape to the pro landscape. And one of the things that has the closest correlation is if you are an elite level college pass rusher, those guys translate extremely well to the NFL level. And the players that have graded around where Latu has or above that have almost all been superstars. I think there's something like 12 guys that have had a PFF grade of 92 or higher over, you know, an extended period of snaps over a season, and 8 of the 12 are NFL Pro Bowlers. So, you know, Latu and the kind of criticism of Latu, two of them. Number one was the medical red flags, and you know, if you clear him for that internally, you have more better information than we do. So you can't really quibble about that from the outside. But the other thing was, well, he's only an okay athlete. He's not special. Number one, he tested out better than I think most people thought he would. And number two, when you use tracking data and those kinds of things, his tracking data on the field actually says he's a top tier athlete. So where it matters, you know, between the hash marks, he's a better athlete than anybody else in this draft class, regardless of what his 40 time or his vertical jump is. So you pair that with insane production, and all of the available data we have says that Latu is going to be a really high level NFL player.
Yeah, I like Latu a lot. I interviewed him at the combine, and you know, there were still some people worried about the injuries that he had early in his career. But like to your point, he's been very productive the last couple of years. The Detroit Lions are a team of interest to me and to obviously to the Chicago Bears. Bears will see the Lions twice this year. First thing before we get to their draft, I knew they liked Jared Goff. I didn't know they liked Jared Goff, $212 million worth. How is that going to affect the Detroit Lions franchise?
It's just going to ramp up the difficulty level. You know, you can certainly succeed with quarterbacks on big second contracts. You know, I think this narrative of you can't possibly win a Super Bowl with a quarterback on that kind of deal, it was never legitimate. I mean, anytime somebody is starting the argument with, you know, no teams or one team, only one team has won a Super Bowl with the following parameters, it's always a ridiculous argument, right? Number one, the sample size of Super Bowls, period, is pretty small. Number two, the game in like 2005, let alone 1995 or 1985 or 75, it's a different world. So you're immediately down to a sample size of like 10 years that even correspond to the current season in terms of what the game looked like and, you know, how close that is to replicating the current situation. And 10, like a sample size of 10 is meaningless. So that was always kind of crazy that you can't do that this mm-hmm. way. So, but Goff was the quarterback that I think everyone knew he's good, he's not great, you know, mm-hmm. and those guys have always been a problem in the NFL. The Kirk Cousins of the world, the Derek Carrs of the world. Yep. Even Matt Ryan, you know, he can push it pretty high and still be in that world of good but not great is a problematic place to be. And there have been a couple of quarterback contracts recently that have dabbled in this middle-class contract world. You know, Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith, guys that we know they're not going to be elite, but they're good. They're good enough to start and be productive and take a team to the playoffs, but they're not good enough to get $50, $60 million a year because that's too much of a problem now. I think people wondered, where was the Jared Goff contract going to land? Was it going to try and straddle that middle ground somewhere and try and get a deal done that gives Goff his payday, but also, you know, recognizes that he's probably not the single biggest driving force on that team? But instead, they go all in. They go, nope, he's our guy, and it doesn't really matter whether he can do the same thing in a vacuum with a different team if we took him out of here and plugged him in somewhere else. For what we have right now, with the nucleus that we've got, with the offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, with all the pieces we have in place, he is good enough to win and play at that kind of level. So we're going to give him top of the market deal. And, you know, it's a risk, but what it really does is just increase the difficulty level in all the personnel moves that they're going to make for, you know, the next 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you were saying too. Good is complicated in the NFL, and it shouldn't necessarily be, because good, like, we all expect elite out of our quarterbacks, and that's simply not realistic. But yeah, I love that, because I've quibbled with that as well, that good is good. But you also were very fond of the Detroit Lions draft. Why?
Yeah, I think they've done a few things. I'm a big fan of almost everything they've been doing with this current regime, Brad mm-hmm. Holmes, Dan Campbell. I think they've done an incredible job there, and they've done it really well, and it's been well thought out, well planned. And even when they've made mistakes, which everybody does in the NFL, right? Nobody is batting 1,000 when it comes to personnel decisions, whether it's the draft, whether it's free agency. You're going to screw things up. The big thing is how you rebound from that, and how do you fix the mistake, and how do you pivot and adjust and go in a different direction. The Lions have done that a couple of times throughout this regime. But I love their approach to the draft. You know, I think generally speaking, there is debate as to whether you should ever trade up in the draft for a position that isn't a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I think certainly when you're outside of the first round, I think the analytics approach is the correct one, that don't do it. You know, if you're outside of the first round, there's not, generally speaking, people aren't good enough to identify the difference between the number 35 overall player and the number 45 overall player. But I think the higher up the draft you get, the more of a reason to do it there is, you know, because now for guys like Terry and Arnold, or for Minnesota with Dallas Turner, or, you know, when you're that close to the top end of the draft, I think you can construct an argument that we are talking about a blue chip player here who slid unexpectedly and was suddenly available in a range the Lions, I'm sure, never expected Arnold to be. You know, I don't think they ran a simulation before the draft that had Terrion Arnold anywhere near where they were going to end up picking. And as soon as that becomes available, that changes your entire dynamic, because now you're saying we might be able to come out of this draft with a blue chip defensive player that we simply never considered was available at this spot. And okay, it'll cost us some draft picks to do it, but we think there is enough of a talent gap between him and, you know, the guys two or three down to make that gamble, make it worthwhile, and to sort of end up with the winning side of what the analytics would say was a losing trade for them. But I also love that they recognized there's also a pretty healthy chance we're wrong, right? And if the analytics are right, we're going to double down and come back and get a cornerback in the next round. And if he's the guy that ends up being the answer at that spot, it's still good, right? Like, they've maximized their chances of hitting on that position. And then even if, you know, let's say they get both those picks right, well, that's fine. You can still accommodate both those guys in the secondary, and it's a good problem to have. Like, the worst thing that can happen is both the guys are busts and neither one of them is any good, at which point they would have been in trouble anyway. But I love the sort of understanding, you know, like the magic in being a really good personnel guy is understanding when to break the rule, right? Or when to bend it. And I think that's a good example of, I am 100% on board with that as a, we understand what the rule is. We think it's worth breaking in this instance, but we also understand there's a reason it's a rule and we're going to insulate ourselves against that. And we'll take the guy in the next round and try and, you know, double down and make sure we get it right somewhere along the way. So I like I like both parts of that process. I like at least one of those players that they came away with. I think Arnold in particular just has an amazing skill set to be a high level man cover guy at the NFL level.
I agree. Yeah, he's really good. Speaking of breaking the rules, most people thought, or so it seemed, that the Atlanta Falcons broke the rules by drafting Michael Penix Jr. at number 8. I didn't think it was as crazy as a lot of people think. And as it turns out, you and I might be on the same page, but maybe for different reasons. What it looks like, you don't think that that was as crazy as everybody else thinks either.
No, I mean, there was the reaction to it was so hyperbolic.
Oh, yeah.
It was a little bit surprising. And in particular, like, there were a lot of smart people and people that generally argue on the kind of analytics side of things when it comes to talking about the NFL, who were discussing it in terms of like, I don't even understand what they've done, right? That I'd never understood, because it seems pretty obvious what they're doing. You might disagree with it, but it's pretty clear that their evaluation essentially comes down to, we believe that A, Michael Penix Jr. is really good, and B, if there is merit to this Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers type of dynamic where a guy sits for 2 years and then hits the ground running and looks amazing, that is worth more to this franchise than any player we could have drafted at number 8 overall that isn't a quarterback. So, and again, you might think that that's incorrect, but that's the determination they've made. And at the very minimum, we're not going to know if that's true or not until years down the line. You know, we have to wait not only to see if he's good right out of the box, but if he is good, does that win you a Super Bowl? And even if it doesn't, or even if it does, you can never know the opposite. Like, we still don't know whether the Green Bay Packers got it right or wrong with Aaron Rodgers or Jordan Love, because you never get to see the counterfactual play out, right? Did Green Bay leave a Super Bowl on the table by drafting Jordan Love instead of a wide receiver to give Aaron Rodgers help and push him over the hump when he was playing at an MVP level, right? If they did, then now Jordan Love needs to win one just to even the scales. So that's the problem with all this, is that at the very minimum, it's a debatable dynamic here. And I think I understand why the Falcons did it. I think ultimately, the reason it caused so many, such hysteria is because it is unprecedented. Like, bits and pieces of that kind of move have happened before, but never all of it at the same time. Like, Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers, the Broncos drafted Tommy Maddox in the first round when John Elway was at the peak of his powers. Like, that's happened before, but all those picks were in the 20s somewhere. Nobody's done it with the number 8 overall pick. Nobody's done it when you just signed the quarterback a few weeks ago, as opposed to the guy that you've had in the building for 10 years already. And because it was Michael Penix, like if that had been Drake May, if Drake May had started to slide and he was available at number 8 overall and they'd made the pick for Drake May, I think it would have been half as noisy in terms of the kickback against it. So it's not necessarily the thing that people are arguing that's the reason that it caused so many problems. It's because it's that, and it was Michael Penix who people thought was a reach at that spot. But at least from the reports, it seems like the NFL collectively was significantly higher on Penix than the draft community or the media or everybody from the outside was.
Yeah, and people freaking out over his age as well. Couple other Bears things before I get you out of here. The Bears offensive line, obviously, that's a big deal for the Bears going into this year. You know, Braxton Jones slotted in as their left tackle, Tevin Jenkins, left guard, center. I definitely want to ask you about, because it's either going to be Ryan Bates or Coleman Shelton, I think. Nate Davis, your right guard, and then Darnell Wright, the right tackle. First of all, how does, you know, those returning guys, I know they don't have a center, how does that group line up? How does that group rank going into this season?
Yeah, it's not a good group, but neither, I don't think, is it a particularly bad one. You know, they're a classic example, I think, of an offensive line that's just sort of average almost across the board. And to be honest, that's fine. Like, I think a great offensive line is a great thing, but it's really difficult to assemble a really good one. Like, I think the single most critical part of offensive line play is just don't have a problematic group. Like, if your offensive line is bad enough to the point where it undermines everything else, particularly young quarterbacks, we've got a problem. If the offensive line is anything above that, we can make it work. And then, you know, we can try and make it as good as possible. And if you have the league's best offensive line, like Philadelphia for the last couple of years, it's great. It gives you a phenomenal platform to work from. But I think the way more important part is getting to middle of the pack, getting to league average, away from being a disaster. I think that's far more important than the next jump, which is going from league average to good to great. And I think that this line will look a lot better with Caleb Williams, the quarterback, than it did with Justin Fields.
One of the reasons Philadelphia is so successful is because of their center and Jason Kelce. Right now, the Bears are talking about Ryan Bates as a potential, Coleman Shelton as well, and there may be some sort of wild card. Do you have any information or discernment on either of those guys, Ryan Bates or Coleman Shelton, on why one should be center and maybe one should not be?
I mean, I could see Coleman Shelton winning that job. I think he's got a better baseline of previous play behind him, and that would make some sense. But I also don't think that they're necessarily completely out of the, you know, the veteran free agent market. I mean, this is a time where the draft is done. We're past the point in the season where signings count against the compensatory formula. So you can essentially pick up veterans now at a time where you didn't want to pick them up previously because it would cost you a future draft pick. And there's veterans available, you know, across the board, not just on the offensive line, but everywhere. There are guys that are capable of starting and being solid players in the upcoming NFL season. So maybe they go with those two guys and they let them battle it out in camp, or maybe, you know, they dip into the free agent market and sign at least one more veteran that could potentially provide some competition there. But I think, you know, if that's the weakest link on the offensive line, which at the moment it probably is on paper, it's a pretty good spot to be in.
Last thing on the defense, how do you look at the Bears defense as a whole? I mean, I thought that they were, you know, really good last year. I'll use the word good. I didn't think that they were elite or anything like that, but what do you think about the Bears defense as a whole?
Yeah, I think it's solid. Obviously, they've made some moves that improve things. You know, before Sweat arrived, they had basically the league's worst pass rush by a distance. Sweat changed that in and of himself. They've added some players as well. Kevin Byard coming over has been another proven quality player in the secondary. But I think overall, you can see that they've sort of taken the approach of, we've invested a lot in the last year or so in young, talented players, and we're going to give those guys an opportunity and a chance to take a step forward in development together and try and grow this group through the draft and from that youth movement, rather than trying to pivot now and try and change it and add a bunch of veterans in there to take that step. Let's focus all the resources on the offensive side of the ball, make sure that the quarterback can succeed given what's around him. And if the defense takes a step together, great. If it doesn't, next offseason, we can start pivoting with some veteran players. So I think that generally has been the approach, and it's probably the right way of doing it.
Sam, this has been great as always. Thank you so much for coming on with us here on The Score, and I'm sure we'll have you on again very soon. Thanks, Sam.
Anytime. Take it easy.
Yep. That is Sam Munson, lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Focus, and I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Mark Grody with you on The Score. A couple of text messages. 630, always nice to hear your voice. Thank you. Mark, the Cubs are not built to win this year. They are one bat short last year, or they were, which I guess should have been the word, and didn't get the run-producing needed bats. Happ, Swanson, and Gomes have regressed, and Bellinger isn't having the same year. I just hope that they sort out who will be here moving forward next year. I mean, yeah, I mean, last year did give the Cubs a lot of hope, and then they choked at the end of the season, but it did feel like there was some momentum going into this season. I'll address that a little bit more later on. Somebody also saying, oh my, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday suckage. Yeah, that's what's going down. And somebody thinks that Sam Munson sounds like Matt Bowen. Still to come on the show tonight, going to have Herb Howard of It's the Bigs talking Bears at 7:25. Tony Andracki on the Cubs at 8:25 for the Marquee Sports Network. Coming up next, somebody who is very critical of the Bears center situation. That is coming up next on The Score. Mark Grody with you on The Score. A couple of text messages. 630, always nice to hear your voice. Thank you. Mark, the Cubs are not built to win this year. They are one bat short last year, or they were, which I guess should have been the word, and didn't get the run producing needed bats. Happ, Swanson, and Gomes have regressed, and Bellinger isn't having the same year. I just hope that they sort out who will be here moving forward next year. I mean, yeah, I mean, last year did give the Cubs a lot of hope, and then they choked at the end of the season, but it did feel like there was some momentum going into this season. I'll address that a little bit more later on. Somebody also saying, oh my, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday suckage. Yeah, that's what's going down. And somebody thinks that Sam Munson sounds like Matt Bowen. Still to come on the show tonight, going to have Herb Howard of It's the Bigs talking Bears at 7:25. Tony Andracki on the Cubs at 8:25 for the Marquee Sports Network. Coming up next, somebody who is very critical of the Bears center situation. That is coming up next on The Score.